Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment. Food as sport. Food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me. Today on American Glutton, I'm joined by Stephen Kramer Glickman. Stephen is a talented actor and comedian, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about his own experiences with weight loss and health. Please enjoy. Sincerely. Stephen Kramer Glickman, welcome to American Glutton Podcast. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm so happy to see you and other people in person.
Yeah, it's nice, right?
Yeah, this is very nice.
It feels like we're breaking out of this egg that we lived in for a long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
An egg with a lot of French toast in that egg.
Yeah, that's right. It's been fucking rough. I've known you for years and years and years, and I never remember if we met at the gym or we met at the comedy club and then saw each other at the gym.
We met at the Laugh Factory. It was you and Juliet Lewis. I was hosting the TJ Miller stand-up show for, I believe it was for Disney, for Big Hero 6 or for How to Train Your Dragon, one of the two. The entire studio came out, the animation studio came out to come watch a stand-up show at the Laugh Factory. I was the host with TJ, which was so much fun.
Yeah.
And you were there afterwards, and I was like, oh my God, it's so cool to finally meet you. I had been such a fan for such a long time.
But we had another connection, didn't
no,
we?
No, the other one was, there was another party for the launch of a cell phone that had a 3D camera or something, right? And you were at that party, and I that was the party I got to talk to you about weight loss. Was the one where I was like, I'm trying to figure out how to do this. And
oh yes, I remember. I was actually thin at that that cell phone party.
You were, yes. Thin. Yeah, thinnish.
I was thinnish.
Yeah. Like you're built. You're a built.
That was like 2012 or 13.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was definitely not as muscular as I am now.
No, and at the time when I met you then, I weighed 387 pounds, somewhere in there. And it was kind of at my highest weight. And I asked you some advice, just kind of like, what you did. And you told me there was a lot of biking involved. And you told me about Eric the Trainer.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, okay, I'm neither of those things. I thought it was a pill maybe or something. I was like, all right, well, great to meet you. And then where it all kind of came around was when we met at the actual gym, with Eric in like where it was actually like had all kind of come together.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So it was first socially, mm-hmm, and then the gym.
Yeah. And the idea for me of getting a trainer and actually working out and making it did not seem like in the cards for me.
Sure.
It just didn't seem like something that I would want to do. I was like, why would – also, it's like when – and I think you understand this too. It's like when you're – if you go up in weight and you're on a TV show – and they just bring you bigger pants.
Yeah.
And bigger shirts. And they keep feeding you. And you keep getting laid because you're on a TV show. Mm-hmm. Like, then, why would you want to lose weight? What's the real point? Unless you're feeling some sort of health concern, like, there's really no reason. And I hadn't had any sort of real health issues that steered me towards it. And it definitely... once that happened, once there was a health concern, once I started getting worried about myself and like feeling it, like walking around and going places and stuff, getting winded, and stuff like, that's when I was like, okay, all right, there's something going on here.
Yeah, I definitely had many years where the only time I ever thought about my weight was, every time you start a new job, you got to get sizes. And the first thing they say is like, give us your sizes, then you have to go in and they actually measure because
when are we ever actually right? Right.
Right.
But every time, but you try, you hold the tape measure where you think it's going to go and you send the wardrobe people your sizes. And for sure, every single job, my sizes were increasing. And I would go like, oh, that doesn't feel good. Like that number went up a lot. And, but other than that, everything you said, I can relate to, which is like, then I don't think about it. Then all my clothes are provided by wardrobe and yeah. There's food everywhere and girls are giving me attention. And like, what do I have to lose weight for?
I was on the show Big Time Rush for like 5 years. And, you know, when I started that show, I don't remember. I think I owned like a pair of jeans and a couple t-shirts and a pair of sneakers I bought at like Payless. Like I really had very little in my wardrobe or financially. I was living in some crappy apartment somewhere, and I was living in Northridge with three other guys. Like I was just, you know, barely scraping by. And so then getting that show, suddenly you have more money than you know what to do with. And then they're letting you take clothes home. And then, you know, like before I knew it, I was a size 56, you know, jeans. And I was like, you know, it didn't really concern me because I was making a living being this big person. And there was no one like making fun of me or hurting my feelings. Like there was no like reason. It didn't feel like there was a reason to lose weight. And honestly, I felt like if I did lose weight, I probably would lose a chunk of my career. Like I was afraid that like if I were to, you know, lose a bunch of weight, it would just ruin me.
Yeah. And, I had that too. Yeah. And then I definitely reinforced that by noticing jobs go away when I got thin. Like I don't consider myself thin now, but when I think back to 2012 and being 40, 50 pounds lighter than I am now, I was legitimately thin, like gaunt, thin guy. And it just was like hard to work. And so I then at some point went like, I'm going to gain weight. And I gained weight and started working again. So and whether the thought manifests the reality or, you know, you're suspicious of what the truth is and then it's borne out through living through it. I don't know which is which, yeah. If I created that for myself or what, but that was objectively true to some degree.
Yeah.
People liked me as a big guy. I always had fat envy of people, and I just did Kevin Smith's podcast and talked about this, but like if I look at Jack Black, who will joyfully take his shirt off, and I look at his round belly and his perfect head of hair,
right,
and I'm like, why couldn't I have been that fat guy?
Right.
You know what I mean? Why was I? His body to me looks perfect. And I never had that. I had the body that was like mortifying, that had to be covered up and like couldn't be exposed. I could never take my shirt off in front. I still can't take my shirt off in front of people.
I'm there with you. You know what? One of the things that 100% changed my career and made it made a huge difference is I played Adam Devine's boyfriend in an episode of Workaholics, and I had to strip naked to just my underwear and like walk around with everything hanging out and crawl into bed with him and cuddle him and try to have sex with him. And
right.
And then I try to have sex with all of his friends and stuff. And it was really, really, it was very scary.
Yeah.
It was a very scary feeling, but I was like, I know it's safe because I'm on a comedy show on Comedy Central and I'm doing something that, like, you know, I had been working out and stuff too, but I was still easily still right around 300 pounds. So,
right.
You know, I was like, ooh, this is nerve wracking. And I've had a couple of times where I've gone in for stuff, you know, over the years where I've gotten either very close or been cast or whatever, where I'm going to be completely, like, basically completely naked or just in my underwear. And I'm like, I just have to keep – I have to keep remembering that it's like, it's okay. This is what I look like. There are other people in the world that look like me.
Yeah.
I'm not alone in that, and that's okay. And, you know, try to reinforce it. But, you know, it was scary, though. That was a scary time, man.
Dude, it's fucking terrifying.
I get it with Jack Black, 100%.
He's beautiful.
He's got this cherubic? Is that a word?
Sure.
I don't know. Something like that. Is it? It is. I don't know.
I say yes.
Yeah.
And if it's not, it communicates something to me. So what fucking difference
Absolutely. With the round face and the hair. I always felt like if I had long hair, then I would work a lot more. And I'm like, right. I'm bald. I'm very bald. I'm never not going to be bald. Like, that's just how it is.
Yeah. You know? Same. It's always something. But and then I get into like some kind of philosophical debate with myself about, it's all bullshit.
Right.
You know, I imagine, like, I look at you and go, you probably look great with your shirt off. Those scenes probably were incredible. And
so funny.
And then I wonder if once you did it, how long did it take before you felt comfortable? And I know if you only do it once, the next time is going to be less uncomfortable, but still uncomfortable. But if you just fucking, like, I really go like, if you just start doing that, if I just started walking around outside with my shirt off, the first time's going to suck. The second time might suck, but a little less. And then eventually, who gives a shit?
Yeah. And not to like be one of those people who's like, oh, I was only comfortable with it because I have a girlfriend. But man, it definitely helped knowing that I'm not going home to nobody at the end of the night. That like, that like there is someone who is attracted to me and I think they're gorgeous. And like that made me feel a little more comfortable to be like, well, as long as she doesn't leave me for doing this, then it'll be okay. But then I really did. What was fun with that was with Workaholics was then being like, oh, I'm a bear.
Right.
And to the gay male community, like I was getting hit up nonstop, which was really
hilarious. Were getting objectified.
I was getting objectified. And there's a couple. And then of course, which is hysterical, is like, you know, on TikTok, on the app TikTok, some kid found the video, the episode, and filmed it on their phone and posted it, and it did like millions of views of them just laughing that it was like me showing up, you know, and it was hilarious and then fun. And it's like another time where like you're seeing it being celebrated instead of, you know, being made fun of for it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
It's a wild thing. And it's all just what we consider to be true or what we consider to be embarrassing or, so it's all just thought.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Have you taken your shirt off for anything on TV or film?
I did a photo shoot late 90s that involved a lot of drugs for a now defunct magazine at a place called Splash, which used to be on, I think, Beverly, which was like a weird sex place where you could rent a room and it had a hot tub and all the rooms were themed. And we did a photo shoot in there. You know, they have all like fake rocks on the wall. Anyway, I'm sure the health department shut this place down, but I did a photo shoot without my shirt on. I can't believe I'm saying this because somebody could go find it and then it would really crush my soul.
Yeah.
One time I've never, I did, for The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh my God.
Everybody in the movie had to sign a nudity thing. And it was, the clause was you will be naked. Not like you got to take your shirt off. You will be naked. Cause there's multiple orgy scenes. And when my agent said that to me, I was like, yeah, okay. And my agent was like, no, they're very serious about this. And I said, yeah, okay. And then my lawyer called me and was like, we want to reiterate how serious they are about this nudity clause. And I was like, yeah, okay. And they were like, you won't take your shirt off for anything, but you're saying yes to a nudity clause. And I was like, it's Scorsese. If I'm going to get naked for anyone, it's Scorsese. I'll get scared. But then when it came down to it, the day of, I fucking panicked and started pitching different ideas. Like, here are all the reasons why I should have my clothes on. And he was cool with one of them. So in the middle of this orgy scene, you get to me And I think we shot it like three different ways. One of them, I'm playing cards with another dude. And one of them, I'm asleep. But in all of the iterations, I have my clothes on. And it was such a wonderful victory.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they didn't fight me real hard on it. I mean, Scorsese really liked my ideas, or he looked at me and he was like, yeah, we don't need you naked in the orgy scene.
You had a hell of a group of guys too. Henry Zebrowski is such a great guy.
Just stark raving naked, and what a beautiful body he had. Like, I looked at him and I was like, if I could just have your body, I would be comfortable doing this.
He's an insane person. He's amazingly talented. Yeah. So funny. Yeah. So
PJ
funny.
PJ Byrne had some kind of a thong on, you know, or a Merkin thong. I don't know. There were great, great dudes who all took their clothes off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's not amazing. Me. I kind of half regret not doing it, but I think what I wound up doing was funny.
Absolutely. I mean, you were in a huge movie. That's a huge movie. I mean, you were in a lot of huge movies, but that
was a really, you know, man, Scorsese.
Scorsese. Yeah. That's extraordinary.
It's definitely a feather in the cap.
You know, it's so funny when you said Kevin Smith, my brain did not match you up with you. From Mallrats,
right.
Like that's such a extraordinary jump that you made in it really, and it inspired a lot from a lot of people. I mean, that weight loss was like incredibly inspiring, man.
Yeah, and that was even like Mallrats. I was very overweight, but I got so much more overweight in the few years after Mallrats. Like, Mallrats was 96. I didn't really start dieting until 2002, and I easily put on 150 pounds from Mallrats.
What about American History X? Was that your biggest, or was it?
No, the biggest I ever was on film was a movie that was going to be so awesome and then just wasn't so awesome, called The First 20 Million Is Always the Hardest, which was John Favreau wrote the script. It was this amazing script, which, like, in the process of shooting, they went, this can't be R-rated. It has to be PG-13. And they completely changed it as we were shooting it and just made it suck.
Ah, shit.
It was also early 2000s when there was a lot of tech stuff happening, and everything techie in the movie then was like out of date before the movie came out.
Oh,
you know,
God.
One of those weird
of course.
Things.
Yeah.
So, but that was the heaviest I ever was. And I started dieting right after that.
Yeah. When I was doing a big time movie for Nickelodeon in the mountains of Canada, we were in Victoria, and we were out in the middle of the mountains, and my blood sugar was having horrible problems. And so they put me on some pills and stuff to try to take my blood sugar down. And
metformin?
Yep. And I was like, oof, this is all kinds of bad news. And my grandfather had diabetes, and they were like, you're pre-diabetic. And I was maybe 385 pounds, somewhere in there. And I talked to my mom. I was sitting in my trailer in the middle of the forest in like Victoria, and I'm sitting in this trailer in the forest, surrounded by trees. And I'm talking to her on the phone, and I'm like, you know, this is 100% true. And I was like, you know, it just sucks. I have to take these pills. And she was like, I'm so disappointed. Like, you really should be taking better care of yourself. And I was like, I'm an adult. I'm a man. And if this is how I want to look, this is how I'm going to look. And I'm a professional. I'm a working actor. Like, you know, I don't have time for dieting and whatever. And like, and I was like, you know, I'm just like, you know, this conversation, you know, when there's a sign to tell me that I should be losing weight, then I will. I was really hard on her. And I was very defensive, and I hung up the phone, And I was sitting there in the trailer. We had a fake fireplace, a little plastic fireplace in the trailer. And I was sitting there and I was like, you know, fucking tell me what to do. And I'm adult man. You don't tell me. I'll do whatever I want. And while I was sitting there doing this, I saw reflection of my glasses I was wearing. I could just see the crackling of the fire in the fireplace. And then, it started smelling weird. And I looked over at the fake plastic fireplace and it was on actual fire.
Oh.
In the trailer, there were flames coming out of the plastic fire. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, my God. And I grabbed my computer and I grabbed my costume and I opened the door to my trailer. And I was like, help. My fireplace is on fire. And this PA guy was like, oh, give it a break. And he turned and looked and he went, oh, my God, get out of there. And I jumped out of my trailer and the entire trailer went up in flames.
Oh, my God.
In the middle of the floor. I mean, the whole thing just went up in a blaze and the whole cast came out and was like, oh, my God. Everyone was watching my trailer burn. And then the fire truck, you know, quickly came in and put it out. And I was like, OK,
that's the sign.
That's the sign. Yes. And I told my mom, I was like, I will get better. I'll get healthier. And
what a fucking call to get.
Seriously.
By the way, I said there will be a sign.
Yeah, there was a sign.
You were right.
It was fire. Right. And it happened right after I got off the phone with her. I mentioned it to James Maslow and I was like, I know that you have a trainer. I know you work out with someone. He was like, his name is Eric the Trainer. And I was like, oh, that's the same guy that Ethan had told me about a few years prior. And I was like, all right. And so I called Eric and I was like, look, I'm a big fat guy. I don't know how I'm going to lose this weight, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, don't worry about it, bro. I got you. When you come back, it's going to be great. I'm going to do this. It's going to be so awesome. And I was like, this guy is... This guy's way too nice.
Yeah.
I was like, this has got to be some kind of trick. And I went back. I got on Sunfare, the food delivery program.
Sure.
And started working out with Eric. And I worked out with him about 5 days a week. And in 8 months, I dropped 125 pounds.
It's insane.
Insane. Changed my entire my metabolism, everything about my body changed. And I got down to like 200 and something. And then I got invited on the Ricky Lake show and brought Eric with me to like talk about weight loss. And it was really fun and sweet. And then I have since then put back on about 30 to 40 pounds over the last, that's 7 years, over 7 or 8 years, I've put back on about 30 or 40 pounds. So now I'm sitting right at around 300.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just during quarantine, since April 1st, I've lost 15 pounds.
It's incredible.
But that it's been completely like – it's not been working out. It's just been like not eating garbage. Right. And also not eating late has right. been a thing. Like having dinner at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock and then just being kind of done, you know, with it for the rest of the night.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Quarantine has been such a strange time because coming into it, I was like, I'm going to have so much time to just do the things that I don't have time to do, which has been totally not true. I've had so much less time since quarantine. I also have a bunch of kids who all came home from their schools in different states. And it's been like, so I have those reasons. But quarantine has been a tougher time to just stay on my normal just to hold on to my normal routine, which I wanted it to be like, oh, this is going to be we initially thought it was going to be 2 weeks, and it's been quite a bit more than that. But I was like, I'm going to get everything done, and it's proven to be quite a bit harder. And I get envious of people who get to like binge watch TV shows because I've done none of that.
Oh, man.
But I'm almost relieved because that's my favorite time to eat is sitting watching television, you know.
Yes, of course.
But that's fucking amazing that you've taken off 15 pounds at a time where it's just like, stay home, do nothing.
Well, you know, it definitely, a lot of it has to do with my girlfriend. She has been like kind of in the morning or whenever we wake up. I don't know if morning still exists anymore. I don't know if time exists anymore.
Really.
But whenever we wake up, like, breakfast is like number one, you know, eggs and, you know, turkey sausage and things like that. Like, have like some, I've been having like a big breakfast and not super carb heavy, but like a breakfast that's, you know, like a real intense, good breakfast.
Yeah.
And then that's helped a lot. So that way I'm not waiting all, because, you know, because sometimes you wait, you just sit around and you wait. And then with Postmates and things like this, you can just order at any time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been trying to make a bit of an effort during the quarantine to kind of not eat myself out of house and home.
Yeah.
Too.
You're killing it. That's awesome. Yeah. Going back to the big chunk of weight that you lost.
Yeah.
And the only time I ever had anybody mention my weight in a roundabout way to me was the producers of Boy Meets World between season one and season two said to my agents, he doesn't have to gain weight for this. Which I certainly wasn't doing intentionally, but apparently it was noticeable to someone. And so my agents say, hey, the producers say you don't have to gain weight for this. And I go, okay. And change nothing because they didn't say I had to lose weight.
Sure.
And I just continued, I guess, to gain weight. But it was a weird thing about being a 17-year-old kid who suddenly has money. And that money largely got spent at drive-thrus around Los Angeles.
Sure.
When I finally did lose weight in an extreme way, I felt the effects. Now, this is over the course of 12 years, but the last 2 years, it went from having taken 100 pounds off to having taken 250 pounds off.
That's huge.
And there I noticed, like, oh, people don't know me anymore. Did you get any of that?
When I lost the weight, I lost it between seasons.
Right.
And when I came back for season three, the creator of the show was not particularly happy. He couldn't outwardly say that he was upset with me that I had lost weight. I'm sure he was happy that, you know, I was healthier.
Right.
But there was a big concern that, like, fat is funny. You're playing this character. If you're not fat, then who are you? So they started padding me up and putting me not in pads, but actually like layers. So the first episode of the third season, I'm wearing a hoodie, a vest, a t-shirt, and some other big thing on my body that is in a padded, like, fluffy vest, you know, one of those right. big giant vests. And it was ridiculous. And I made it known to them that I was like, I'm not going to lose a bunch of weight and then have you guys pretend like I didn't lose a bunch of weight. And they wrote it into the script that one of the characters would say, looking good, or something like this to me, as like the way to cover it, you right. know. But the Nickelodeon network definitely felt like it needed to be addressed that I looked significantly different between the two seasons. And then they were not pleased that all the clothes that they had made for me for the season prior would not fit me anymore. The suits, everything had to go. And like pajamas that were, you know, 6XL, you know, they're like, it's like, sorry, guys. They like handmade 6XL pajamas for me. And it was like, I'm a 2XL now, guys. Yeah. Can't do anything with that. And, you know, that was kind of like frustrating for their costume department. luckily I kept a lot of those pieces, and sometimes I'll throw them on just to kind of remind myself that like I was heavier and bigger at another time. But
yeah,
it definitely. My manager at the time was like a little uncomfortable with the weight loss. Other industry professional people were like, I don't know what you're going to play now. And I did not get seen for a lot of stuff, you know, during that time. Like it definitely had some negative effects to my career, but I really don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like if other people had a problem with it, that was their problem. You know, like I was so happy to just, you know, feel healthy and feel better than I had.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like I was carrying a lot of weight emotionally and physically with me. And so, you know, shedding some of that was great. And having people in your corner that were like, you know, trying to stay healthy and trying to do healthy things. Like, I've never gotten to the point that I'd like to be.
Right.
Like, I've never gotten so small that it was like being stopped on the, you know, people stop recognizing you. Like, I haven't hit that point, but I would like to at some point. I'd like to see what that looks like. I just haven't figured out the pathway.
It becomes really weird because, you know, you want to get into like, for me, there's all the metrics of like, where am I comfortable? Where does like medicine and science say I'm healthiest? And when I was doing roughly 8 hours of cardio a day, which is a fucking shitload of cardio, riding a bicycle like I was a actual professional cyclist, and I got down to close to 200 pounds, on the BMI scale, I was still overweight. I was the exact same body fat percentage that I am now and 40 to 50 pounds lighter, but still overweight. Now, technically, I'm obese right now on that scale. So I go like, what the fuck do these guys know? You know what I mean? Like, right. What I'm taller than the average on that scale, and I have more muscle than the average on that scale. So
yeah.
That puts me into this category, and I can't do anything about it. And when I crushed myself to get actually thin, I still didn't fit their scale. You know what I mean? Like, I went and saw this guy, Dr. Huizenga, who was the doctor on The Biggest Loser. He's like a sports nutrition medicine guy. And when he initially saw me, at that time I was like 230. He was like, oh no, you're really overweight. We're going to put you on a diet. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, that's just what you're saying. And then he put me through a DEXA scan, and this is almost 10 years ago. And I came out of it, and he read the chart, had me do the DEXA scan again, came back, and he was like, no, you don't need to lose weight at all. You're perfectly fine. You're very healthy. And I was like, couldn't you just look at me and tell me that? You're just
right.
Reading numbers. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And I since have a good relationship with him. Like, he's a really good guy. But he was just going based on like the BMI scale says you need to be here. And at some point that all falls apart. But like,
it does. It does, because we're not numbers, you
right.
know, like and certain people look better at different weights. Like my best friend is rail thin. The guy eats a dozen donuts in a sitting, and he's can't put on any weight. And, you know, he's like, you know, like anyone that checked him out would be like, this guy needs to gain weight to look better. But he would look weird. Like, he's looked the same way. He's almost 50 years old. The guy's looked the same way his entire life. Like, you're not going to change the metaphysical makeup of a human being. Like, if someone's supposed to look a certain way, if someone's supposed to be broad chested and big and intimidating looking, no matter how much weight they lose or gain, they're always going to still retain some of that. Like, that's just human nature.
Yeah.
I think. Right.
I think so. And then I go at, there's also the point of like, what you want for yourself and where you're comfortable. I wasn't comfortable 50 pounds lighter than I am now. I truly didn't know. I didn't know who I was. I didn't feel comfortable. I felt like a light breeze could knock me over. And everything about that, I was like, what is this? I'm not comfortable. I'm extremely comfortable now.
Yeah. And you look great.
And I just go like, well, this is around where I want to be. Like, can I lose 15 pounds and see the little abs on my ribs? I'd like that, but for a day, and then I'll go back to around here. You know what I mean? That's like, right. That's the game I'm playing now, but it is really about where I'm comfortable. And like to what you said, to your point, it's like, I don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I've had comments recently on social media posts that are like, you're still fat, and here's all the reasons you're still fat. Go like, okay, I'm not going to ever win you. Dude is not ever going to, like, I can't do anything for that dude.
No, of course.
You know, yeah. And then there are other people who say stuff like, you're not funny anymore. And it's like, well, you haven't seen me try to be funny, so I don't know how you know that. But if you just were laughing because I'm fat, I can't do anything about that either.
Social media, too, is such a – the thing that I enjoy the most about social media is that you can just block people willy-nilly whenever you want to and just delete people out of the universe. Because that's basically what you're doing. You're just going, you don't exist in the universe, and just making people vanish left and right. And anytime I post anything that's like at all political, and I'm not a political person at all. I mean, I'm a Canadian, you know, I have no right to be political about anything, but anytime I do, you know, have any sort of like opinion about something like that, I will always end up attracting a bunch of angry people.
Yeah.
And then I can just go, all right, either I agree with this person's, you know, stuff, or I don't, or whatever. But if they're like rude and like hateful, or they're like bullying or being really, you know, awful to me, I can just be like, block, 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 yeah. block. You know, and it's like, great. I don't need to have those people around if they're going to be, you know, rude and awful to me.
Yeah.
You know,
politics is a real strange thing because kind of no matter what your idea is,
sure,
somebody's going to be highly offended by it.
Of course. Of course. And like, you know, as a comedian, sometimes you have moments or jokes or things that, you know, you try to make a point or whatever. Like I just had this album come out in March where called Voices in My Head, and it's my first big album, like with a big record label. And in the album, I made fun of George W. Bush, President Obama, Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, and Bill Clinton. I do impressions of all five of them.
Right.
And
that's the safest way to do it.
Yeah. Do all of them.
Yeah.
Because then the people that love Trump think it's hilarious that you're making fun of, you know, Bill Clinton, and the people who hate Donald Trump think it's hilarious because you're making fun of him and W. And like, it was a really fun way of doing it. And Stormy Daniels came to the taping and sat in the audience, which is super fun and bizarre.
Yeah.
But after it's come out, you know, you watch people on I posted clips of it on my social media and watched people get pissed off at me for all sorts of different reasons. And you're like, come on. Like, I can't please everybody. I can't please everybody about my weight. I sure as hell can't please everybody about politics. Like, you know, then what's the point?
Yeah,
you
what's know,
just,
the point?
Yeah, just enjoy your life.
Yeah, I also go, like, I certainly don't need everybody to agree with me. Like, I'm not, like, whatever universe we're in, because I love the analogy of like, you no longer exist in the universe. You are banned.
Yeah.
And there are certainly tons of people who get that. Also, like, I want to be in a place where it's like, here's a whole bunch of ideas, and here's people advocating for what they've found workable. And like, that's great, because I love to learn things from different people. You know what I mean? I don't think there's anything. I think it gets into like your idea is harmful.
Yeah. It's only the only time I feel like I need to block people is if like I am if they have a difference of opinion than me, that's one thing. But if it's like racist behavior and it's showing up on my Instagram, like it's gone. Like with the guy who just was killed by the cops and the thing and that whole thing. I posted something about it and just in support and, sure. And, there were a few racist comments that popped up and I was just like, I have to get rid of these people. Like, I don't want these people following my stuff or staying in touch with me or which could be tricky too. It's like, I do Instagram lives and bring people on live with me. And it's like, if they follow me and they're saying racist things, then I bring them on a live by accident. And then suddenly, you know, it's just all hell breaks loose. Like I got to be so careful with that stuff.
And I think there's a difference between somebody advocating an idea that's workable where you look at politics and you go like, this team, I think largely, and I think about this, I think it's kind of the same thing with diets, because there's a lot of that within the diet industry of like, gluten is bad for everyone.
Right.
And it's like, well, the Italians seem to be okay. I know they took coronavirus pretty hard, but like, for the most part, they're pretty healthy. You go over there, not a lot of overweight Italians from my memories of Italy, they seem to be having
a great time.
They're very happy.
Yeah.
They kiss each other a lot. Like, that's fun. So how could it be bad for everyone? And then there's like, my wife has friends who's like, you can't tell people to eat that because you're poisoning them. And I go like, well, it's not poisoning me.
I'm like, I'm alive.
I'm just really saying what's worked for me. I'm not saying anybody else should do this.
Hey, I mean, people go like, everyone is like Fabio, Fabio, the supermodel.
Yeah.
Him and me have lunch together when he is in town.
Come on.
Oh, we've been friends for, I thought you knew that.
I didn't know that.
We've been friends for like almost 20 years.
Really?
And, we're very, very close and weird friends because he's, you know, jacked, you know?
Yeah.
And like we were sitting at lunch one time and I ordered a cheese plate for us to share. And he said, Steven, I don't eat cheese. I've never had cheese in my whole life. I'm not going to try right now. And I was like, Fabio, just have like a couple little pieces. He was like, Steven, everyone knows that cheese is bad for everyone. It is not good. Milk is not for eating. It is only for cows. It's not allowed. And also it is kind of a gay. It's for gay people. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you know how they make a cheese? They squeeze it until it come out. And I was like, that's how you think cheese is made?
Right.
From a cow's dick? What are you talking? That's not at all how that works, dude. Right. And we had a very long discussion about the semantics of cows and bulls and where milk. I mean, the guy is a fucking lunatic. But it really inspired conversations between friends where you're like, oh, people truly believe that milk is poisonous.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, but ice cream is amazing.
Right.
And like, so what do you, yogurt, people eat yogurt all the time. Like, no, it's not, it's probably not poisonous.
Right.
Like it's maybe we shouldn't be having it, but that's not to say that it's like horrifying for you. I mean, I'm not currently eating ice cream, but like other people eat ice cream. People go to the Baskin Robbins all the time.
Yeah.
They're not dead. I just don't understand.
It's so funny because my wife, when I first got together with her, she was like, I don't allow milk in the house. Cheese wasn't so bad, but cow's milk was banned. And it took about 15 years to come to find out that she's just lactose intolerant. And that's why cow's milk, we've never had it. Like, we had almond milk, and now there's all kinds of fucking milks, oats and nuts and macadamia, coconut and all. You can make milk out of anything. But at the time, I think it was rice milk 15, 20 years ago that was a big thing. But she had this thing of like, no, milk is bad. And like, I was so fat and grew up and I was just like, I'll defer to you, whatever you
yeah,
say.
Yeah, whatever you think is like, probably the right move.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go sneak a glass of milk every now and again because I do shit like that. But like, if you don't want milk in the house, that's totally fine. And now I bust her chops about it because she's just lactose intolerant. Certainly there are celiacs and gluten can be act like poison to a celiac. But like, that's a very small percentage of people, you know? Yeah. And okay, if all you're eating is pasta, maybe that's not a healthy diet. Fine. That's perfectly fine. But, you know, there was lectins are bad and nightshades are bad. And like, there's these like tribes of people who are like, you have to be this and you have to do this. And this is the only thing. And at the end of the day, I go like, what worked for you? Advocate from that position. Here's what worked for me. Don't advocate from the position that it's like universally true that it's the only way or that it's the best way or whatever your thing is. Just tell me what worked for you because I'm interested in that. And I think that's the same thing with politics. It's like, you want to tell me socialism is the be all end all? Just tell me how it benefited you or how you've observed it to benefit people or what you like about it. You know what I mean? Or, capitalism is the be all end all. Just tell me your like your experience. That's what I'm interested in. And when you tell me your experience, I will acknowledge that and recognize your truth in that. But don't try to make it my truth.
Yeah. You have to be you have to live with empathy and listen to other people and try to understand where other people are coming from, whether it is for politics or for weight loss or for anything, religion, anything. Like the more that you can, you know, live with empathy and like try to listen to the rest of the world, it sure as hell makes things easier because just deciding that people are wrong and cutting them out of your life because they have a difference of opinion or a different political view or this or that, it's like you can have conversations with people and people can change. Yeah. Like, you know, like if it's an important enough thing that a person's opinion needs to change to keep them in your life, like try to, you know, work on it, work with them on it because relationships are important. You don't want to lose out on people because, you know, you have a difference of opinion and something.
Yeah. Know? But I also like when you say like the delete button is necessary.
Oh yeah.
Because you make a post saying something in support of something and then you get a bunch of shitty comments. There are also going to be just mean-spirited people who aren't necessarily trying to help or advocating their ideas. They're just trying to diarrhea on your parade.
Yeah, no. I mean, personally, if it's like one-to-one personal relationships that you're, you know, like your uncle is like a big fan or supporter of someone that you're not a fan or supporter of, like you can have conversations with people and try to bring people around to either around to your way or to be able to understand why they like, you know, things the way they do. But when it comes to the internet, I don't, like, I try to like have respect for my fan base on the, sorry, I knocked into the microphone. I try to have respect for my fan base that I have. But if people are rude or shitty, like a friend of mine passed away a little while ago. And I was very sad and I posted a picture of them on my Instagram. And the first comment was, when is Big Time Rush coming back?
Ooh.
And I blocked that person immediately. And it was like, that person may not speak English. Like that person may be from Mongolia and is like a fan from Mongolia. That's a possibility, but I don't need to have that in my in my life. Like,
Instagram also does a good translate. So fuck that person.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I'm not. I don't need to like deal with fans that are not respectful of my actual life of who I am as a human being. However, I have to tell you this because you will truly appreciate this. When I got together with my girlfriend, she said that I should stop eating red meat because red meat was – I was not – it just seemed like I wasn't handling it well. I was getting stomach aches or whatever. For whatever reason, she thought that I should stop eating red meat. So I did. Stopped eating it. And then a couple of years later I've been with her for 8 years. So like a couple of years go by and someone offered me a steak at a party or something. And I had it and I was like, oh my God, this is so good. You know? And then I told her and she was like, you're not supposed to have red meat. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. So I stopped again for like a while. And then one big night I was doing my podcast, The Nighttime Show. We were doing it live. We had Lisa Loeb on the show and she sang Stay on it, you know, which is so cool. Live on stage in front of 200 people. Such a cool night. Big, big fun night. And after it was over, we were like, let's go celebrate. And me and the other guys I do the show with, we were like, let's go to this place, Pacific Dining Car.
The best.
So great, right? So we're like, yeah, go to Pacific Dining Car. And on this specific night, it was if you buy something – whatever you buy, you get an additional one for free.
Wow.
Because it was like the anniversary of the place, of Pacific Dining Car. So we go down there and I order a 16-ounce steak with potatoes and a big thing of broccoli. And then they're like, we're gonna give you another 16-ounce steak with potatoes and broccoli to take home. I was like, oh, that's so great, right? So I eat my 16-ounce steak, and this is the first steak I've had in years,
right?
Like years, like 3 or 4 years at this point, I had not had steak. So I eat the entire 16-ounce steak, and I'm still hungry. And the second 16-ounce steak arrives, and I'm like, maybe I'll just have like a little bit. I ended up finishing off the second 16-ounce steak.
Wow.
So that's 32 ounces of steak that I've eaten after not having steak for quite a long time. And I was fine. I was totally fine.
Yeah.
I go home, feel great. I get into bed with my girlfriend, go to sleep, totally fine. Middle of the night, the 32 ounces of steak turned into what only I can describe as a meat sword that started carving through the inside of my body, like for revenge. Yeah. Like it was just cutting through me and I am in horrible pain. I'm sweating, my dripping sweat. I'm having meat sweats and I'm like, I'm a mess, right? And so I wake her up at like 3 in the morning and I'm like, we have to go to urgent care or some sort of hospital because I feel like I'm gonna die. Like this is just the worst thing that's ever happened to me. She takes me in the middle of the night to like an urgent care and we sit down. I make her sit in the waiting room. I go in, I see the doctor. And I was like, I'm in so much pain and I made a terrible choice. And he was like, what did you eat tonight? And I was like, I had a 16-ounce steak and then I had another 16-ounce steak. And he was like, over what time period did this happen? And I was like, 22 minutes. And he was like, oh, my God, you're going to die. He was like, oh, no. And he gave me a pill and told me, like, to just stop eating. He told me to stop eating like an idiot,
right,
is the way that he described it. And then the best part was I was like, hey, this is like a side note, but I was like, hey, can I ask you a favor? Just because I'm in so much pain, I was like, can we bring my girlfriend in and will you tell her that the reason I'm in so much pain is because I'm pregnant? Like, just to fuck with her, you know? Like, And he was like, I don't normally do jokes, but like, I'll do it for you. Like, it's okay, whatever. Very nice guy. Brings her in, just deadpan, super serious. And he's like, this is 100% real. He goes, Rachel, I have examined your boyfriend, and I can tell you now, without a shadow of a doubt, the reason he is in so much pain in his stomach is because a man have sex with him, and now he is a pregnant man. And she was like, what the fuck is going on right now? And then he was like, I am joking. And she was like, I'm not having sex with you for a month. And that was... Yeah, and then I didn't get laid for a month. But it was worth it.
But, like, that is a good reason to not eat red meat.
Yeah, like to not have sex for a month.
Well, I mean, if it leads to hospital trips and pains and meat sores.
Oh, my God, dude. I stopped eating. I didn't have red meat again for probably a year or two. And then just recently, within the last year and a half, I've been like, okay.
But you limited now it to 1 pound at a time.
Yes. I go a couple ounces, right. Little small steak is more than enough for me. I never want to have to feel that kind of pain again. But you know when your appetite is, you know, when you have a your stomach is big enough, like anything, you have the appetite for fucking anything, like, and you have to curb that appetite in different ways. I mean, like, the amount of times that, like, you know, over the years where I would order a pizza and it's like, I could just eat the whole pizza.
Sure.
And I'm like, but you can't eat the whole pizza. You shouldn't eat the whole pizza.
Right.
And so, like, training yourself by maybe having like two slices of pizza and being like, that's it. That's all the pizza that I get to eat, and putting the rest, you know, away for later. Like, that's like really a tricky part of this, of the journey, because your body and your mind tells you you're still hungry.
Yeah.
Even when.
No, it's work.
Yeah.
It's actual work. It's diligence and work to do that. If No, I think you're totally right.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah. Stephen Kramer Glickman, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my God. Thanks for having me. I truly appreciate getting to chat with you.
This was awesome.
Yeah, you know, you're cool. You're so cool.
You
thanks,
too.
Bud.
Thank you. Now for the Q&A. This question comes from Becky. I have heard you mention carb cycling on the podcast. What is carb cycling, and why would this be advantageous in a nutrition fitness plan? Thank you for your question, Becky. Carb cycling is basically taking the principles of the high fat and low fat diets and kind of going back and forth. So the high fat days, you are low carb and you go through a few carbs and you fully deplete your system of glycogen. You switch back and you go low fat but high carb for a couple of days and you replenish your stores of glycogen. I have only ever really done that when I was riding bicycles a lot, and I basically was low carb, but if I had a really, really big ride, and I mean like over 100 miles with a lot of climbing up mountains, I planned for the next day, I would eat some carbohydrates the night before just because I would feel like total crap in the middle of that ride if I didn't do that. But for the most part, I was still very low carb, and so what happens is eventually you just utterly deplete that stored glycogen and your body's either going to start using ketones or break down protein and turn that into glycogen. And your body's kind of like a smart machine where it's going to figure it out, or you're just going to get tired and not feel great. So I think that that's just another version of a diet. I have heard some bodybuilders talk about carb cycling in terms of your body not being able to figure out what you're doing to it. So if you are on a diet that you're not changing and you're not changing your routine, it is possible for your diet, your body, to start gaming what you're doing and going like, well, you're withholding energy, so we're going to figure out ways to withhold energy expenditure. And and maybe your weight loss slows. And from what I've been told, I haven't read a lot of data, but I have had conversations about it. And the idea is that if you kind of switch back and forth between high fat and low fat while maintaining a caloric deficit, your body, you confuse it to the point where you can, in theory, keep doing that longer. I don't know that that's true. I haven't done that, but that's when I've talked about carb cycling. That's kind of the idea behind it, and that's what it is. You go between high fat and low fat, and this is all within a caloric deficit. So you're never going to just go. It's not like you wouldn't do keto all week and then eat pizzas, because a pizza is both carbohydrates and fat. So that wouldn't work, because you're then just spiking your calories. The idea would be you're doing like a low calorie, but still with a lot of protein. You're doing a low carb, and then you're just filling your carbohydrate stores on the weekends, basically. But on the weekends, you're reducing your fat, so your calories stay down. That is my understanding of carb cycling. If you're a professional, you know, cyclist, carb cycling could just be eating like a normal person all week, and then the night before a race, you eat three bowls of pasta. That could be carb cycling too, you know, just like really filling up your potential stores of glycogen. Thank you for the question, Becky. If you have a question that you'd like me to answer on the podcast, please submit it to AmericanGlutton.net. Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.